Bajan rhythm and rhyme. On the line, we've got Sluggy Dan, your host, and we have a special guest for tonight, two-time Calypso Monarch of Barbados, a tremendous asset to the cultural legacy, especially Calypso in Barbados, William Waif, a.k.a. Classic. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening to all the other country.
Good evening, manners and respect. Ronnie, manners and respect. My brethren, Classic, and good evening to Barbados. Yes, everyone, I'm here. The phone is getting crazy. My phone is getting crazy. Yes, Sluggy's here. And I love you all. Thanks for the support, Ronnie. No player. A big number, they think that was 2015. You did that and they begged together, I think.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, Smurfish and they begged together. But Classic, we'll take you back first, right? Some videos resurfaced. I don't know if it's because of the quarantine and you're seeing things more or what, but some videos resurfaced and the whole video online now for everyone to see the Teen Talent 1983. And the lineup that I follow was crazy because it was Edwin, then you, then Blood. Every year was then William Reyes. He wasn't Classic as yet.
Yeah.
and then and it's Armstrong. Blood did the original number that night, Calypso. And you did two interesting songs apart from what I know you for. But when you hear these songs, I can still hear that those types of songs are you. But in the last verse of one of the songs, you sang a verse and then you said you didn't rehearse it with the band because you wanted the audience to hear it first and add some of your own lyrics. You at that time, you were about how old?
I was 17 around that time.
Was young, a boy, teen talent,
17, 18,
and from that time,
you were already writing your own songs? Yes, actually I started writing originals and the original Teen Talent. That's why I got my start in writing. I didn't start writing Calypso. I started writing like ballads and stuff, so I would have done about two original ballads in the original Teen Talent show then, and I just took it, you know, just jumped into Calypso just so.
so that one was an original?
Yeah, I did an original, and I did a tribute to Richard Stout, a medley tribute to Richard Stout, and
medley to Richard Stout songs, right? And then an original song.
But you heard about the last
verse, especially for the finals night.
Yeah. It was just, you know, risking sand, yeah.
No, but it was interesting to study writing. It was writing from all back then. So how you got to that point, Classic? How it started? How you got to a young boy, a teenager, black boy, instead of running about, you decide, well, I go into Teen Talent. How you got to that point? You were doing music before that?
Well, at secondary school, it was at the Garrison School then, and I used to sing a lot. You know, people like Phoebe got a little voice and things, we tend to sing, you know, in classroom and like in sport and stuff. So a friend of mine, he told me, man, like, you ain't trying to sing, you don't go in Richard Stone Teen Talent show, they got Teen Talent going on. That made me know that when there's Teen Talent, and so, you know, so I did my little checking out and research and stuff, and I entered the Richard Stone Teen Talent that would have been 79, sorry. Right.
Well, seven is first time you entered.
Yeah. I never just don't show, but I didn't do too good. It used to be at the Holiday Inn. The preliminaries used to be at the Holiday Inn then.
Mm-hmm.
That was right. That was the same year that we in Daisley won. Right.
Then
we in Daisley won. It was in that preliminary, and then there was a young lady called Mary Sears. The blind young lady that she could have had a beautiful voice as well.
But
I didn't get past the preliminary, so I get cruel and I come back in 1980, right? They had a song by Dan Hill called Sometimes When We Touch. So I did that song as a last thing because I didn't get the adequate rehearsal and thing. So I just did that song as a last minute thing. I'm going to get his part right there. Till the friend me subside, my voice cracked right there. So anyhow, I get subsided, you see what I mean? Man, going back. So I went in 1980. So in 1980, Darren McCollum won. But in 1981, it came back then, and they made the finals in the Richard Stout Teen Talent show in 1981, 1982, and 1983.
So in 1980, when you did not enter,
I didn't let how things went down with my story, but I tried to come last or any preliminary because I got a little snap for the end. My voice cracked right there, so I did a song with ballads, you know, because I said that I was into ballads then. I just like ballads and singing, love songs, kind of thing.
But in 1980, you stayed away from singing altogether.
Exactly. I said, man, I ain't going, man. But then, some, you know, as a singer and an artist, he's got this thing in me that is, you can't push it away, no matter what.
Even yeah, because you can't just stay home and watch TV. As
exactly. What if that's saying in you, there's going to be an urging.
You got to go.
There's going to be something in you pushing you no matter what. You may get vexed and feel you ain't get a good break, but you know what? Eventually, you can come back again, though. Once you love what you're doing and that is for you, if that's for you, you can come back. That it'd be bigger than you. It'd be stronger than you. So that's
that
all
is, yeah, that's true.
You know, so I went back in 1981, and I went to the finals, and that year, it had people like Tim, Mark Mavell on that year.
Miss V?
Yeah.
She won that year in 81.
Yeah, she won A1. I had Janice Thompson, you know?
Janice who?
Janice Thompson, Clarence Thompson family, Janice Thompson.
Okay.
Right, so, right. But then the following year, 82 now was, who won in 82? I can't remember who won in 82, but I went 82, everybody finals as well in 82, and then 83 is when Edwin won.
Oh, so all those years you were doing originals?
I was doing, I was doing some covers in between. I was a big Barry Manilow fan then. So I used to do like Barry songs, and then I started my writing skills started there. I started writing because somehow I want. At school I used to write compositions as well, so I had this knack for writing. So I started writing. I was one of the first students in town to do an original song, but because back then everybody was doing original songs, everybody were doing some songs like people that they like who were popular at the time. You know, covers and stuff. So that's how it went down. But I just had this knack for writing, and I took up my pen and I started writing from then. You know.
And you just tell you about this original song. You see me? You entered this song in the competition. Or you know, because being young, I was in Teen Talent young too.
Yeah.
So you know, that experience of your own song.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody singing a big tune.
So but I jumped from Teen Talent straight into Calypso. You know, as a writer, because what happened in 1983, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gabby had a tent called The First Timers. It used to be on Sunday evenings at the George Street Auditorium. So fellas that weren't in the big tents then would get a chance to come and, you know, if he was a budding Calypso.
First Timers.
First Timers Calypso tent on a Sunday evening.
Well, right, this something that me and that Gabby and I are supposed to talk about, well, both
right,
Gabby
right.
and Ronnie Carr. You know, you can't cover Gabby
right,
in one or
so
two sessions. Gabby
so
tell
guy,
you a woman.
Mm-hmm, it's true.
You tell me about the tent First Timers.
Yeah, so the guy that won that, I wrote his song. Right? That time they had people in that competition like Punka, same Youngblood was in there too, and Jadu. A lot of them fellas got them started in the Gabby's First Timers tent. A lot of people don't know that. Right?
So this time you had the own competition and
yeah,
so
it's an in-house competition for people that were not in the established tent, but it was like Gabby was giving fellas an opportunity that singing for the first
Gabby
time.
Gabby doing this all
yeah,
back in 1983?
Yeah. All back then, all that thing Gabby was doing that, a lot of people don't understand.
37 years ago, boy.
All right, then, a lot of people don't understand the contribution that Gabby made to this.
Whoa, boy, you know, give me classic, like, being real on me, like, barge off, but, you know, give me some cool bumps. That's real long ago, 37
yes, yes.
years ago. That's around my age, brother.
Wait, so when I hear people talking about, no, this was selling songs, you got a bad song for this and that. Let me tell you something. Man, it's going to be Gabby in President Kennedy Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabby was setting up a guitar, Pompey, Green, Viper, all in the room. All in there come around, but got a little problem with the song or whatever. And Gabby would just give the fellas little tips and little ideas and things he write for somebody good. But in the First Timers tent, a lot of the guys Gabby wrote for. But as I say, I wasn't singing then. I wrote for a fella that lived up with me in Licorice Village, a guy called Villager.
Mm-hmm.
And he won the competition. So after
oh,
he won
in
the competition.
The same year that you was in the Teen Talent Finals? 83?
No, this was 1980. Yeah, this is 1983. Yeah, that would mean.
Oh, this happened in 1983?
Yes, all happened. It was a novice.
Right, so you are in Teen Talent.
Teen Talent. I mean, I write 2 million songs in a Calypso competition.
Like straight.
So we don't know.
At 17 years old,
yeah,
you left Teen Talent
18,
a
yes.
boy.
Yes.
I write 2 songs for Gabby Tank first. I mean, you didn't say
yes.
that. I'm a singer. But I ain't singing these songs. I mean, small, you will love a big. Everybody,
mm-hmm.
like, we young singing, like,
mm-hmm.
all you went through it, you will love a big song. You will
mm-hmm.
like a song to hit. But you decide,
mm-hmm.
well, see me? Again, because I have a good song, called it
mm-hmm.
one, and then Gabby
right.
10. And I know Gabby personally, and I know
right.
Gabby working with youngsters, nothing but the best.
Yes.
You have
song.
To be the best. If you go to write it for you, if you go to sing it and put it on the tape back then, or nowadays it's by a voice,
yes.
no, Gabby go to sing it over
I
you and
you,
he can make sure you get
it. It was very competitive because I thought Punk was in that final Blood was in that final. Jadu was in that final. They failed for a timer stand.
Right, and like you said, Gabby was writing a lot of songs.
Yes, he was writing these songs. But they write these two songs now. And because he felt him, he wanted to sing Calypso. What happens is that after I came out of Teen Talent, I realized that in Barbados, all their love songs you're singing in Teen Talent, you really can't get anywhere with them. They're not avenue for them. But Calypso then was budding. It was a big year for Calypso that year. Gabby had songs with Boots and thing, and Grainer had it singing Bees or one. But Calypso was on the up then. So then they realized, well, hey, with this art form taking off and we singing these love songs, all of them good and thing, you can't really get anywhere with them songs though in Barbados though. So I just jump on the Calypso bandwagon as a writer. Yes, you know what I mean? And they write these songs and he fell out and the guy won. Right, but he.
But you was looking for that. You was looking for that, though, or you was just because you was real young, so you was definitely having fun. You was definitely somebody writing these songs. I enjoyed the competition. My friend can sing, but you wasn't telling yourself, "Man, we can win this."
The truth is, we went to win because I knew he had the potential to stop. But
well, I let you honest about that.
We went to win because he put out the stops and things. But I had liked what was going on in Calypso art form. I liked what was happening. That's the same year Brian bypassed to yourself. And Calypso was taking off. That's the same year the finals got washed out there at the stadium. You were here when the year even the finals. When Brian had Mr. T and
Punka.
Yeah. Punka, all okay. That same year, you know. But so Calypso was on the up then. Calypso big teams.
You know what you're saying? I said that the same year they're talking about with Gabby and these first timers tank, that the first time you write Calypso songs in your life, for somebody else to enter competition. That's the same year that was washed out at the stadium.
Yes, that was that same year. 1983 then.
Yo.
1983. Right? So that's your. But when I was in Teen Talent, the next, I used to go to Battleground Tent. In the time and thing, you know, anybody would let me come and watch it. I love Calypso there, right? So I love what was going on. So we would go to Battleground Town and I would see Romeo and the same Viper and Gabby and them performing. I would admire how these men, especially Romeo, man, he's so drastic. And this man delivery was something that's so smooth.
Yeah, Romy had me so too. Like, that's amazing you say so. Because Romy, like, and as you know, my style, you know, like, the lovey-dovey style, but like, it's smooth. You know me already.
Right,
well, like,
yeah.
And Romy used to sing to my heart, like, very smooth. And take your time, my great
horses.
But everything's symmetrical. Like, if he's pants on the scene, he pants see me come back with his scene, and he jacket, and his shoes going to be spotless.
But
his hair going to be perfect, and then he can make sure he's sung perfect on stage.
Talking about phrasing and delivery and
diction. Oh my God, boy.
Romy in the class with yourself, man. So I used to admire this man. This was 1983. And the next year, lo and behold, I was singing in Battleground. So that was like a dream then. Because I didn't expect that. That wasn't planned. But after the guy won the competition, and then Gabby knew me from Teen Talent too. And then he said, if you're writing these kind of songs, will you come and come and sing?
Yeah, Gabby will go because Gabby and Richard grew together. They was buddies all that time.
Right.
But from so little boys to main, from boys for the North and South. So Gabby tell me, still, Gabby still follow Teen Talent all now.
Yeah, so he spots something in me, right? So he spots something in me, annoying me. He tell me, man, I'll come and sing. So next year, 84, I went and sing. And that's how he started.
So Gabby bring you in to...
Yes, he introduced me. He introduced me to Calypso, yeah.
Yeah, Gabby mentioned your name as one, yeah. Gabby mentioned you, Blood, Allison, a lot more who you were with. So in 1984... You said Gabby, and this boy, like, I know we ice praise it a lot, but can't stop praising like Gabby. Hear me tell you?
Man
does so much.
I'm still continuing to. I think people are going to realize the values of Gabby's work, unfortunately, when he's gone. That happens, that whole life goes. Sometimes we don't understand a person's work. Don't take effect until, unfortunately, when they really. Because I think what's going to happen then, people are going to start to research his work. And then generations to come are going to study his work. And they're gonna see the landscape of his music and the legacy that he would have left. But people are not gonna see it now because I know they say don't get a king in your own country.
It's hard. Like obviously for me, you know, we can grasp it in entirety. You know, sometimes tears will come to your eyes. You will get cool bounce because you could see how this person changed you.
Yes,
so it's
yes,
personal.
Yes.
So everybody can feel for like you see first timers thing. You write two songs. You don't sing them yourself. Somebody else sing them. Gabby know you from Teen Talent. It just happened that you went Teen Talent, and it happened that Richard Stowe and Gabby best friends all them life. So have to know, Gabby know everybody in Thailand. Gabby right. average. So love each other more than brothers. It's so then Gabby took you and put you and bring you in the tank. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's only one, and there's only one person. And Gabby calls so much other names, and he ain't call all people who call mm-hmm. Gabby names. So right. you can get it, like when you're going. Cause that's to me that's amazing. That although you don't sing the calypso, you still have Gabby still see it. You said Gabby saw something in you.
Yeah, he saw something. He saw me writing ability, right? And he encouraged me, right? He encouraged mm-hmm. me to come and sing after the guy. After the guy didn't come, man, the guy villager, he did not come back in Calypso since then. But you know, Gabby encouraged me. My Willie, because y'all call me Willie. My Willie, mm-hmm. man, you could come and sing. You're ready to Calypso, come and sing Calypso. You know, so when he first sang Calypso, I had to get my very very first rehearsal the same time that I went and recorded in Steel Shed. I mean, that was a big risk because I never sang Calypso in my life before. And I didn't all that time didn't get a chance to rehearse because of a number of issues relating to not rehearse. And it was my first time. My CD had arranged my first song then. Right? And
Mike Seeley?
Yes, Mike Seeley.
Your body's called Mike Seeley. No, yeah. Mike Seeley is late. Mike Seeley's unmatched. Like, Mike Seeley's unmatched in music when it comes to arranging, but he's not a good first
special
thing.
Person when it comes to arranging.
And that's pressure for a youngster too, for you young age mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, so what happened is that CBC used to record the tents in the Steel Shed then. So mm-hmm. The very first time I get to perform was recording night before mm-hmm. the television camera. I didn't know how things was going to go. I didn't only rehearse the same evening at 4 o'clock, so I was taking a big risk. So mm-hmm. what happened is that being that I did not get to rehearse this song, right? When I got to perform the song on the night time, I had the backup vocals, didn't learn my song on that. So, and Gabby, I tell you the story. Gabby and Mark Lord stand up in the wings at the Steel Shed at the stage. Nobody can't mm-hmm. see them. I just tell the men the lines to sing before you go on stage. But 5 minutes before you go on stage, I tell the men the lines to sing. And these men stand up with a microphone behind them and sing the song perfect.
This way love people that you write, and mm-hmm. then what you see is always some bug winner as a young man. Always mm-hmm. some bug winner. Because you see these stories?
Mm-hmm.
People don't hear stories called My Lord in the Small Fish. Not belittling anyone else and saying anybody's a small fish, but it being real. And it's mm-hmm. thinking as an educator. When you break down what Mark Lord and Gabby does.
They're
extremely different, but they are masters of their craft. Mark projection, Mark quality, Mark timber, Mark technique, everything is perfect. And then Gabby, like, you know, like, we can't say enough. So you said two of these men who are no legends, and you had to be a teenager still, buddy.
Yeah.
So, 1984, you had to be a teenager still.
Then, 19
so, I tell you, I'm asking you, so you got Marlon and Gabby, who's legend. You said them was in the wings.
They were my first backup vocalist. Gabby and Marlon are my first backup vocalist. You men stand up. I mean, how many artists would allow you to do that? No man, so me not taking that job when you rehearse. I mean,
the caliber of men took on. I was wrong entertainers, and I could speak about we, you know we. And mm-hmm. you push the edge, so you be a bit chauvinistic mm-hmm. sometimes. Especially if you got your craft to study.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you saying that that wasn't the reaction at all? Like you teaching these men lyrics. These two big men, legends in the game.
I tell them, you know, I ain't got to rehearse, but I got a song here again to sing. No, I want to do the vocals from a Dizzy Lane here. But 5 minutes, and the men harmonize the lane, get behind the Steel Shed in the wings. You can't, obviously, all the crowd can't see that. And sing the backup vocals like they knew the song before. And the song was recorded. The song was recorded for the radio. You still play all the time on the radio and everything. A song called The Robbers. You know, it's like dealing with crime and that kind of thing.
Right, because back then, you know, from a research and a thing too late, like, from back then when they record. When the songs got recorded in the tank from True CBC, they were clear. Mm-hmm. That recording was clear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that recording you said that you get that night is the recording that was recorded.
Right.
And so that was the first time you sang the song one rehearsal.
First time I think it's in my life. So I took
Battleground?
This Battleground Steel Shed.
Battleground, you know? That was Tank. And do you remember who was in the band?
Who was in the band?
Ellis?
I think Allison and guys understand.
Yeah, because Allison, he didn't battle going in the early stages.
You know, Ricky Bradford and them fellas and things, so.
Yeah.
Well, I think Arthur Tapping used to play, and Nicholas Brown used to play a bass in 10, and in 10, you know, Nicholas used to play in Battleground. In the early days, Nicholas
in the early days?
Yes, Nicholas playing Battleground in the early days with Ricky Bradford.
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't know that. I know Arturo played, I know Tank played, I know Ricky and Hog. Whoa, boy.
Right, then probably became up in tense, man.
There's a legendary company to be in for a young boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Nicholas would have been young too, but I mean, mm-hmm. Nicholas, I top his craft, boy.
Yep. That way, them guys surrounded, right? Because they came through the hard pipe, you know what I mean? That's what I mean.
So, yeah, but I know you a long time, and I listen to a lot in conversations with you. But I never hear this yet. Yeah, you know, with that year, you first year you come in, Mark Lord and Gabby, who you mm-hmm. sent it back before you went on stage, mm-hmm. about 5 before, and Mark yeah. Lord and Gabby, who sang yeah. was your first yeah. backup vocalist in Calypso.
That's my very first. That was an honor. That
Mark
honor.
Lord and Gabby. Yeah. I don't know if you haven't told this story from radio yet, but the first yeah. time I ever hear it.
Yeah, you see, these things come away, they set in the culture, see?
Yeah.
Jesus, come on. Jesus, come on. Yeah,
it's true. That was, yeah,
that was fun. And that was fun, you know.
It had to be. Can you imagine that? I can't imagine. Like, no, if I'm going to get that, no, for you. Because when I was in police band, Mark come and perform a lot, and Gabby mm-hmm. a lot. Speaking with them men, performing with them men, backing them men. Like, it don't mean nothing but good voice. Mm-hmm. Man, that on top of the yeah. craft, but you can yeah. make it an enjoyable night. You can talk some junk after the done too, before the start too. Mm-hmm. And on stage, you can see that come out. That had to be real fun.
That is a reflection of the camaraderie that existed then too, you know. Because how many fellas today don't want to make some of me, I know you song. I represent you. I got nothing. I got mess about you. You know what I mean? But then men mm-hmm. so believe in themselves and know their ability, right? And they can practice a song with it famous before you go on stage. And they know they start singing it identical without making mistakes on it. So then men is, yes, I don't think we understand the wealth of the talent that we have in this country, you know. And the clips of our farm on a whole. The kind of ability you gotta have to write consistently good calypso, you know. Calypso is one of the toughest art forms in the world. You know, but people, they don't get the due credit that they deserve. But I mean, that's another story altogether.
No, but you're right, because like stories like that will clearly show you the brilliance of man. Because to learn anything on the fly mm-hmm. easy, and then to perform it for recording,
right?
And then the recording was much more tedious, and it was also TV too.
So if it go there and things didn't go well, you know that on record for the balance of your life, you gotta live with that. you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, that point taken, that's another point.
Take a chance and you just call it a sluggy, man. We got a short night. You rehearse, you got one other rehearsal, but you know, you take a chance, you're gone, you're gone before your camera. And in this day and age, when everything viral now, you're gone before the world. So
yeah,
you're going to
know
things,
yeah.
things don't work. That all the world till you're dead. You know,
in their times, it would have been bad still too, because being but it's a small country, everybody mm-hmm. would have known you, everybody can know you. Then,
yeah.
if, then when you turn classic, everybody can know classic. So,
right.
so if right, you mess right. it there, you know you can see and hear it
yeah.
every day.
There was a level of anticipation too, because people, as I said, people know me from Teen Talent, and they weren't
yeah,
sure
yeah.
how you would have adapted to Calypso. So in Steel Shed, you had the Steel Shed Park that night and all kind of people in there, so... So here, you know, people know me as William. We have and I will be introduced. Came up coming on Teen Talent Show. So they're looking to see how you can do now. But I did well. Actually, I did well. It sounded not very well that night. You know, and it was I'm honored and blessed for that. You know, that's
yes.
just part of my history.
Yeah, boy. So how you got your name? How you switched your name? Classic.
I gave myself that name because at that time everybody used to be the Mighty This and the Mighty That and Lord This Body, and I didn't want to be. I wanted to be different. A classic is I wanted a name that was different. A classic is an excellent model of its kind. So I would suit me though. You know what I mean? So I had an idea about me that I felt it was different, and I just wanted to project that difference about me. In my own little way. So I just came with that name, and that was it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a serious name to live up to.
Well, I hope it's done a part so far.
yeah, for sure. But I mean, from then, because, you know, mm-hmm. obviously in the early stage, you want to know that your career can span over 30 years, and you mm-hmm. want to know that you will end up with 2 crowns and placing in the front of the lot, and you wouldn't know that yet. Obviously, you will aspire to reach it, but you want to know so to step forward and call yourself classic.
Right. But, you know, it's a journey, it's a struggle, Okay, I wouldn't get the impression that it was all better on roses or anything like that. It was a struggle. I had some painful years throughout the years and stuff. You know, many disappointments and stuff.
Yeah, you remember, boy. I remember one boy once standing in my but in my time, I know early days, but in my time, you had some big words.
That big word one of the years that you really get on for. As a matter of fact, that
won't hurt me, boy.
If it was one year that I felt like it was going to quit Calypso, it was that year. That's true. I mean, I my back brow, I personally can only take so much. If it's one year, I knew it was really unjustly done, unfair. It was, but they had that sound. Because even the judging night itself, everybody in town was saying, at least, you know, classic gone for certain. And all the
no,
other
that, no, that night, that, I think this was the Big Show.
Mm-hmm, yes, it was Big Show.
And that night, that judging night, for sure, everybody, like, classic gone.
Yeah,
it was just big words. The way you delivered the song.
Yes, that was one of the most difficult songs I've ever written, though. I would say
it had to be because you Calypso, you can't Calypso. If you write a Calypso that go over everybody's head, right? You still got to write it in a way that if it go over everybody's head, everybody can reach at it. So everybody can pull at it. So the song can pull on everybody, right? That's one of the things I learned from watching Gabby. Good. So you still can't put it too far out of reach.
No,
it's still social commentary. And social commentary is like if you're an activist. You know what I mean? Just that like you're doing it through art. Just if it was a political activist, it would do money through politics and policy. But you're doing it through art and music, you know, which is rhythm and rhyme. So you still can't play out of reach. And you have big words in such a way that when you sing it and when you dance, it's like, yo, what this man now do, boy? Like, what this man now do with this song, boy? That is brilliant.
It was one of the most difficult songs to write, honestly, because you got to use the words, you got to make sense, you got to rhyme, and the word got to be big. You know, it just...
yeah, boy,
I had a resort to the thesaurus and all kind of thing and dictionary. People don't know who he's going to choose, something as writers or no.
Well, but you had to, for you say for this song?
Yes, I had to.
For this song, it's an excellent that process to me. You had to go...
Because you're looking for big words, so you got to find words... A word that big and saying what you want to say. You may know you want to say, but you can't find a word that big. You know what I mean? So you want to look for a word. So you find a word, but the word is, now you got to rhyme with that word or no? So you can't read because the word already there. So you look for some big ingrained word and say you want to say it. Then you got to look for lines now that can rhyme with that and say what you want to say. So that all them is challenges in writing, you know? So you have to structure. So you have to rearrange what you can say then, in order to capture something, the meter in the particular word, so that the line will come across smooth. All them is usually right.
Whole what you just explained there, like it showed me the difficulty because you might find a big word, so you might find spatial temporal. And you got the big word now, you know what I mean? That's existing in space and time.
You got the meaning,
you got the big word, but putting that in a rhythm and in a metric that you see.
And letting it meter and everything, and make sense. You understand me? So something you got to juggle other words, but you may find a word, but the word ain't fitting there. It be meter in there, so that's why it ain't flowing.
You have to find another big word for there.
Right. Yeah, so if you're dealing with economic matter, now you got to find a word that explains economics, and it got to rhyme. When they say astronomically, periodically, or whatever it is that means dealing with finance, you know. But sometimes the listener may not know, but at the same time, you still have to do what you have to do, right? Sometimes people learn, pick up later.
Correct. The song might have reached, but they can get it.
Yes.
So even if they pick up later, you still have to pick up later, but they got to get it. But for sure, you tell yourself, judges that say they don't should get it.
Unfortunately, some of them don't. I ain't knocking down, but I wonder if they don't be able to be listening for. But, you know, that was then, and I ain't dwell on it. I do believe that people that judging you should be trained and understand those things even more than the average person, though. That's true.
That's one of my beliefs, too. And not just training music, because... I know a lot of great, great, great musicians who don't like Calypso at all, and who don't know that Calypso at all.
Well, then you shouldn't judge Calypso then. She got
I will still see the judging sometimes.
But
I don't feel like it happened. I ain't knocking the direction to going now. So hopefully you can keep getting better, but that was one for sure. Big words. But but your first time in the finals, that would obviously be the first time apart from a team talent finals.
Right. Me.
How different was that?
That was 1986 when I had Talent Californians. Talent Californians.
Right. And just 3 years before you were a teen in Teen Talent Finals, how different was that?
Well, it was. It had to adapt because, as I said, calypso is a different. A balladeer just can't go and sing calypso. If you're a person who sings ballads, you just can't go and sing. Calypso is a different adaptation altogether. And the phrasing is different. If you're singing a calypso, like if you're singing a ballad, people are not going to identify with that. You can get something wrong.
So I'm real glad you're going there.
Yeah.
I'm real glad you're going there because I that's one that I realized. It can work sometimes, but depending upon...
It don't sound right. But you hold out your lines and things, so you got no way to chop it. Because to get that emphasis and to make your point, you can't sing like if you're singing a ballad. Right? They're especially the types of calypso that I sing. I sing songs that we phrase in. Yeah, where you get guys singing songs where they take a ballad structured song and put it to a calypso beat. But that's something different, you know?
Right. Well, the
jury to be out on that is whether it's a calypso or not and that kind of thing. But I won't get into no, right? But the authentic calypso, no, you got a phrase. Like what Granite does and what Gabby does and what Bike does and that's phrasing. You know, so you got free. So when I was singing ballads, I was singing by man also. So I knew there and then I had to change my style. So my ballad voice completely different than my calypso voice.
Very, 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 and you seem different to in two different worlds.
Yeah, you have, because you have to, calypso is different, you got to adapt to it. Calypso is a different art form altogether. You just can't say, well, he's a singer, so I ain't going to sing a calypso song tomorry. That's where you find, when you find some people make that transition, they don't come across genuine and people can't relate to them because it was, being a calypsonian. A calypsonian is a different art form altogether.
That's a real interesting thing. That way finally, just being a real good singer, right? Naturally people will feel like a singer real good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I can go in calypso. You know, get a good song from Gabby and it can be good.
It'd be
real different from watching. They watch a couple people really work hard, I think, but still didn't come across like other people. They watch somebody they love, Sheldon Hope. They watch Sheldon Hope when first man. He always did really well. Uh-huh. He always did really well, but he could always tell well Sheldon could play his third or fourth.
Uh-huh.
Because he could always tell well that. Missing, but the magic there you could hear his song.
Yeah.
He's praying, but the twang. That was where he was looking for.
Exactly. And there's an authenticity about the calypsonian. That if you don't have it, people are going to pick it up. People are going to realize it.
Yeah, it's not just music. You know what I mean?
No.
It's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
It died real hard to gas because you might, for me, no, I might be a good vocalist. So analyze the judging criteria, obviously. So, you know, you can know what rendition is. I can know performances, I can know presentation. So when they come, it may be real good. So you may get a fourth or a third, or even a second, right? But still, there's this thing that missing where how is supposed to sing a Freddie song that's the unwritten rule.
Yeah, and you gotta live them lyrics.
Unwritten rule.
You gotta live the lyrics too, because if you're living them lyrics and you're feeling them lyrics, the audience gonna pick up that, and they're gonna see you just singing the song, right? And you're gonna come across. It's just like how. When you watch Grind Up sing a calypso, and they tell that same calypso, and a youngster with a good voice sing that calypso, he will create the same magic that Grind Up create, because he got to study. You got to identify with those lyrics first, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just keep telling people it's a process, and I call it from the page to the stage. you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta lift it now from after you write it, and that transition to the stage, but just going on stage and taking a microphone and singing the song. That's why some people succeed in social commentary and other singers don't. You will get them a good song and tell them to sing social commentary, and they will not create the effect that we call it authentically. So they will create, because they have to identify their lyrics and live those lyrics and believe them too. You know, otherwise it's going to come across in your performance. You see, that happens to a lot of good singers. They sing in Calypso, but the audience is not watching them. They ain't doing that wrong, but it just ain't coming across. It ain't reaching the audience because you're not living those lyrics. You're just singing the songs about you to sing.
Mm-hmm.
A true Calypso is a way of life, you know. It's a struggle. He identifies with what goes on. And you can't read Calypso. You can't read a good Calypso if you're out there in the trenches among the people. I can't read a good Calypso if I don't go among the people and listen to what people talk about when days come amongst the people. I can't stay in a bubble and read a top-class Calypso. No way. Because you got to use the language and the idioms and everything that the people use. You got to identify. In other words, you're basically representing the masses, the people.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just sing a song and you're living that song, I could pick it up, I could feel it. The audiences feel it. And that would make Malik so authentic because he's a true Calypsonian. Grinding them as true Calypsonians. Because when this thing you can is relatable then.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatable. You know that way say they're Calypsonians and they're Calypso singers. It's a difference.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not an insult, it's
no,
they
not,
honestly
it's
observe
not,
because the life differently. Like if I watch the same blood, like also the same blood, if I watch Grainer, if I watch Gabby, I see a different life.
Mm-hmm.
A different life. When you go up on stage, everything, when you always get is that you always react to everything different. So I might be singing I Feel to Wine, I Feel to Jam, I Feel to Grain, right? I might be singing that and sound good. But how you are going to be with the audience and the music can be different to me. Although two of these singers, we both are singers.
Yes,
I know Calypso alone. I play Calypso for 17 years in the best band in work. I ever played Calypso, like Police Band. But still, on stage now, a Calypsonian different to a singer. It can be a good Calypso singer. And I might even do very well. But then being a Calypsonian now, I can sing the words different. I can phrase the words different. And I can perform on stage different. Because a singer now, a singer performance is being, he's singing, but Calypsonian performance is being everything.
Yes.
Real suggested classic. That way, fine. Even you two, you may be singing Sam, but not do as much as me, but slight little moves you can do be real suggestive.
Right.
Make you laugh. If you sing Humbug My School, you can not walk up stink or show you buttocks all the time, but you can do one slight suggestive thing, and from there, the audience going well for the whole song.
Exactly. In other words, you got to reach the audience at their level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like me. You gotta reach them. But some people don't try to reach the audience. Just sing the song. You have to reach the person at level. In other words, you gotta be believable. Then it's like if one boy tell you a story, another person tell you a story. You believe. If you don't want one person put it over, you believe it. The other person put it over. You're just hearing a story, but you already. Yeah, so I mean, you got. So it's like how you carry it. The messenger. It makes a big.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a big lot of difference. That's like it's maybe difficult to explain. But there's a realism about the Calypso art form that is bigger than all of us, and we come along and find, and we can't replace
it.
Yeah,
it's far bigger, and it's unwritten.
It is, because Calypso music, especially social commentary, is about people, and it is about what they're going through. It's about their experiences. It's about their life. It's about their struggle, and you are representing that. You are saying, so many things going on in the country, and we bring that message to the people about it. We are like their representative then. So we got to be believable, and we got to be able to put that across to the average man and say, yes, that's what you mean, that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because he ain't doing it, you the person doing it. So therefore, you got to put it over in a way that you represented the masses, the people. If something goes on in Barbados and people in Barbados are not pleased with it, and we are social commentators and we put it in a song, we got to represent the people and sing it in a way that the average man can identify with it. And at the same time, you're entertaining. You're not preaching to people or lecturing to people, but you still got to be entertaining because that's where the musical element come into it and everything. So so that is why we, the messengers, must find a way to reach the people. And I think why some songs fail is because they don't reach the people. So that if you ain't reaching the people, you got to maybe go back, look at your music, look at how you got the song written, look at how it's structured, look at the tempo, whatever. But you got to reach the people. And different artists do it different ways. Everybody got their own style and everything, but you got to find a way to reach the people and express your message to the people.
Well, right, you're saying you got to find it, ain't necessarily a one way, but you got to find the way, and when you find the way,
yes.
You got to reach people. I like
you
that.
Got to reach the people.
Yeah, and you said something there, like you're giving a master class and you never know. You said something there that tickled my mind when you said social commentary and Calypso is about the struggle and it's about the people and it's about the message, and you, the Calypsonian, the social commentator, represents that. So that's
yes, you are. Yes, that's your role.
But that's a real powerful thing. Because when you look back at, like, when you watch interviews, I know it's a worm too, so like, when they get these going to dark hole, so like, Lord Pretender, watching a lot of interviews with Lord Pretender and David Rudder. Lord Pretender was old, David Rudder was coming up, and Lord Pretender was saying something similar. He was saying that's why a Calypsonian and a Calypso singer don't walk the same life. And he was saying he didn't necessarily mean because you don't write the song, because Gabby might write a song for Grainer, but Grainer walked a certain life that a Calypsonian can identify with. You know what I mean? Obviously, he didn't say Grainer, but Lord Pretender was saying he was showing the examples, because you see, he started from young too, and what you are saying there is something very, very similar, because like, you bring in a message, like, I got 50 people in the audience back then, and it's literally a tent, and they bring in a message, so like, my neighbor got limes, right, and she gave all the limes to the white man. So I bring this message to the people.
Yeah.
I got to be careful how we put over this message, because I see you as a representation of me, and if I like it, you representing me wrong, so that's why the battle should be strong. So that's why the love is strong, because when you find a way to reach me,
yes,
that's my song.
Yes, and that you're gonna respond.
Deep boy, you know what I mean?
You gotta put a jump in Calypso. But if you ask them, what are you doing this? What's your purpose for doing this? They can't tell you. It's an ongoing thing. Everybody putting Calypso band, why can they just want to sing a song?
But you like the music, but you don't love the art.
A true Calypso, it's got a reason why he or she does what they do. They've got a message to bring. They're saying they want to do something, they want to see it. And even if they ain't making money from it, they don't mind. That way, a lot of our backs are brought and be teddy licks and still come back. People want to be foolish. They got people meet me and say, my, I don't know. Remember, you ever done with that, boy? You real strong, boy. I can't take that, boy. You got every year and let it off for you. So, you tell me, what I'm saying, if you were done with them or not.
The reason.
I can understand what they mean, right?
You can see, like, when you just saw TC come to mind, too. Here, TC sport a few times, you know, like, she's coming back all the time because she do it for a reason, you know what I mean? And nobody else can see the reason. She do it for a reason. She will got a following. That we see TC will got a following. All people that love her, that don't care what she do, would love
her. The purpose must become bigger than you. Once the purpose has become bigger than you, that makes it easier. Because if it's about self-aggrandizement and just, you know, material or financial success, you wouldn't do it. I always say Calypso is a very thankless art form. We ain't gonna be superstars. We ain't got top 40 hits, none, and so we do it because we love it, and we got it. And as much as people keep saying, "Man, it's dead," and it's dead. Listen, we can go along and leave it. Ain't gonna die. It may change.
Can't.
It's not going to die.
It can't die.
Because if you understand the origin, it's written in history. It's written in slavery. You understand how Calypso was born and everything.
It's bigger than us. For sure.
So it may not be popular. It's a big difference, but it may be popular, but it still lives. They got a lot of things. Jazz
isn't
popular. Jazz is going to be popular. It might be mainstream, but I don't think we ever say my jazz is going to die, or country music, or anything.
No, it can't because Calypso created things that are called classics. And then you got songs, similar thing happening, right? Happening in Calypso. You got songs that are not Calypso, but attached to Calypso. How you got a redemption song attached to Bob Marley?
Mm-hmm.
But Redemption Song is not reggae. But when you heard about greatest reggae hits, people, it's called Redemption Song, but that's a folk song.
Understood, clearly.
But people still lump it in reggae because it attached to something bigger. Like, when you hear Gabby, you can't say Gabby about Emerton.
Exactly.
But Gabby's one of the best Calypsonians that ever lived.
Agreed.
Emerton is not a Calypso. So is that when you say the purpose might even be bigger than you.
Right.
You see, probably bigger than what you're doing might be a reason other than what you're doing, because it leads to other things.
So
you understand?
True.
So way it identifies those things, that it's always got moments that can be far bigger than just the music. So before you won your first crown, you was ever telling yourself, man, they can keep singing, but you know they ain't giving me the crown, or I ain't giving the crown. You was ever thinking that in your life?
Well, I never developed that, what you call that, pessimistic mentality, where it's I would never win, right? But I reached the stage where I was no longer trying to win. I was just trying to do my best and try to become a better me, better Calypsonian. You understand me? You know, because after going through much struggle and stuff and disappointment, I came to the point where I said, you know what? I can just sing my songs and look to get better and do better. But and life is so, you know, ironic or strange is that when I wasn't trying so hard is when I won. You know, sometimes you try, not that I wasn't trying to win, but I'm saying that I think there were times when I used to try too hard, right? And I have this professional thing about me where everything must be...
Yeah, I know that for a fact.
Right? So sometimes that what can happen, the downside to that, is that you can find yourself a little stiff or a little... and don't enjoy what you're doing because you're trying too hard.
Yeah, you're allowing your mind to open around.
Yes, and it's when you lighten up a little bit, have fun. Lighten up and just try to have fun. Then things, you know, move in a different direction. But as I say, I'm human. There are times when I felt like, I wouldn't say we'll give up, but even if I felt like giving up, I felt frustrated. Whenever you see, and me, you're an artistic person as well, whenever you see crop over coming around, getting close there, ideas just start coming to me, melodies just start coming to me, you can't suppress it. As an artist, you can't suppress it. I ain't singing that song, or I done with that because for me last year or year before, whatever. Once you see things happening in the country, ideas coming to me, and you're itching to write them, I want you to write them, I want to sing them.
Not altogether. Don't care how. Not altogether, because I never. I was too young to see Saddam sing.
Mm-hmm.
But I know hundreds of songs Saddam wrote.
Yeah, I never saw Saddam sing either. But he's one of the people who, in my early days, he draws into my attention. He's saying song telling collections I didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. Like truth. When he wrote this song, he told me it's one of the Saddam song because he's one of the people who he used to look up to. He's like the song he had Tom say, I love that song. Saddam was one of the people they used to look up to.
Saddam?
That's
happened to me. Like, I always call a name that attached to whoever they're talking to. That's happened every time.
That song Tom said. And he drew to my attention. I didn't even realize what I had done in the song. He told me, Classic, you realize that you're rhyming in the middle and at the ending in that song. A lot of people can't get that done. He said the song telling Calypsonians, celebration in the land. Because the people take a stand against oppression, and all the tyrants get a blow. We even come out and show. He said people do not write those like that. That's hard.
Mostly rhyme, like, ends the lines.
Exactly. So I will rhyme it in the middle and at the ending, which is the hardest to do. Consistently throughout the whole song.
Extremely.
Yeah. And he drew it to my attention. I didn't even realize that I was doing that. I was doing it, like, subconsciously then. You know?
You did not purposely do that. That just naturally happened.
It happened. I celebrated something like that. Like, I don't know where it came from. Honestly, I would have realized I'd done it, but I'm saying that I didn't. I'm not saying this is how you're going to start with this song. But I structured the lyrics and the melody. That's how it came out. And it came across, and I continued doing it that way. And it just flowed like that. And when he saw me, this was way back in 1986, and to him that was a big deal. He's a classic. Were you doing something in that song that, you know, only top class writers does do? Men never heard of doing that because it takes time and effort to do that. You're rhyming in the middle and then the ending.
And
you know?
Yeah, and don't get to that classic. That's trail off too. Like for me working with children, you know, I've been writing and that happens. That's trail off.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Impossible, but it's extremely difficult.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You know what I mean? You want to say it can't ever happen because you do it and many others do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that it would not attempt. I prefer to write, this land is my land. You know what I mean? And I hold my staff with my right hand. I prefer to let it be that.
Call that easy.
You know what I mean? If it come in the middle, like, oh gosh, where are we going here? Where this sound taking me? But you said that happened to you naturally. And Saddam is the person that pointed that out.
Yeah, he pointed out to me. To me, obviously, but they did it, but to me, it wasn't a big deal. But he how he joined the
I get you. No, you didn't know. Like, you really didn't know about this technique that people don't execute just so.
Exactly. So I think all those things will help me develop my writing skill, because I think that you have to challenge yourself as a writer. And I think a lot of writers, they look for the easy way out. Sometimes a song could take me a while to write because I'm challenging myself. If I ain't get perfect, if I ain't get the lines that I want, if I got to find a way to say what I want to say and get come out how I want. Otherwise, because sometimes you want to say something, but you got to find a word to rhyme to say what you want to say. So you just can't find a word to rhyme, so you got to readjust the whole line. You know? So in order to, and if you're rhyming a different word, you don't have the same effect.
So,
it's true.
I remember one hit classic, but I tell me classic boy, I give credit because I don't know how many fellas continue with this. You see the social commentary thing? I can't have this no more. You know, I mean, I got a lot of love and respect for her. And you say, but I give credit for continuing with this because, let me tell you, you see the social commentary thing, continue with that. And you get a certain age and trying to remember all their lines and their words and stuff. It can't be easy.
Baggers always say hard, though. I'm not a privilege. The baggers say on radio, on TV, baggers always say, look, singing social commentary time, writing that is be hard.
It's hard. But I don't regret doing it because I think it has developed me as a person too, you know, and it developed me as a writer. Because when you challenge yourself, when you do something in life and the kind of struggle comes with it, they say in life ain't what you go through, it's who you become. You know, I think that I have become a better writer and a better person because those struggles have impacted upon me as a person and taught me about life, taught me about perseverance, you know, not to give up. And I could pass on some of these same traits to some of the youngsters and stuff because a lot of young people, I find that they don't get what they want to give up. They ain't got that indomitable spirit to fight and keep and to bear the brunt and bear the licks. You got to take the licks. That's how you become good. You got to be able to take the licks and, you know, I mean, because if we feel as though once we ain't get what we want, we done and we give up. Sometimes you just give up and you're on the verge of things happening, you know. Yeah, because if I give up and get frustrated when I have had 2 crowns, how long it took me to get 2 crowns? Somebody has given up when it was 30 years or 28 years and the hell with that. You know what I mean? You know how many collisions came in and started and stopped and frustration and gone down with that. And a lot of them had very good potential in my opinion, but don't call any names. But I said, because it persevered, I was rewarded. I was rewarded because it persevered.
That is so true. Because it had a lot of collisions who I look at her and like I used to mimic my styles after like them though. Good singers dressed well. Men had it all. But
a lot of men give up.
Come third and fourth, a lot second and ten boys.
A lot of people cannot handle judging decisions, right? But you see, I tell myself, right, never ever let the competition define me. Never let the judging define me. If you let that define you, then you could also forget about it. If you judge and rate yourself based upon how you do in a competition, as far as I can see, you could forget about it. Yeah,
interesting.
Don't rate your craft based upon how you place or if you don't place and that kind of stuff. Yes, you can feel it's human, but too much credit sometimes to the competition itself. Don't let the competition define you or define what you do. You know, believe that you got something to offer, and you keep offering it, and you'll be rewarded for it. I never let the competition define me in some manner. If they offering me, I done with that, kind of bad, or whatever. That means that you're only singing for the competition. Sing because you have said an offer, and you got, you know what I mean, and you love what you do.
Yeah, it's like having something to say instead of having to say something.
Exactly. And believe in it. And once you believe in it, you know what I mean? And I see like from a philosophical perspective too. So when they just kept on using my craft and doing what God do, I always tell myself that there will come a time when they got 2 songs that they can't stop me though. And then make except one they know they may get offering, but one they got 2 songs that didn't get this competition, and even the one offering they can't offer me because it can be clear, it can be obvious that I can dive in.
You always tell yourself that.
Yeah, I just tell myself so. That is the motive.
But it was always one. I liken you to AC, although AC Young, because you was one that nearly all of you in the public always said the year classic got 2 songs that can't beat it. You know, and I'm sure you will hear that a lot. Two people will come and tell you, listen here, the year you got 2 songs that can't beat you because you will got songs that will mash up the stadium. I don't understand from the first night. I was always saying, I used to credit you to luck and unlucky at the same time because classic, if you be fair with your career, bro, in the tank, especially when it comes to somebody that on every night, obviously we ain't gonna know if you got a bad night behind the scene, you know, if you got that night, but when you hit on that stage, classic, you was the one you get love in the tank all the time.
It's true.
This one thing got bigger Barbados for our class. When you in the tank, don't care what names on, you could go out, Gabby singing, Bai singing, John, you was in competition, you was singing years with all these men, Gabby, Bai, John King, Greener, Romeo, Invader. You know me, could go on and on.
I came
and
found them,
man.
They started before me. I came and found them. I learned from them.
That's my point.
Right.
Correct that my point. I mean, how you came and found all those guys. Correct that my point. Because
obviously, Gabby's like Gabby told me last week, 73, around that age.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're, like, you're near 73, so where you come out playing them. So it means you, right. I mean, the love you get still from Barbados. You still love to see that.
Right.
You, when you come out in 10, boy, especially big show, it's all big show a lot.
That support, I want to say a thanks to the Barbadian public for all the support over the years. That has kept me going, you know what I mean? And I always try to improve, too. Even if you compare my singing then to now, I sing better. I ain't bragging. That's how I work.
Nah, but yeah, right? it's different.
Yeah.
It's far better.
My enunciation and everything is, I mean, obviously I got my flaws because that makes you who you are. Because Calypso art form is not a perfect. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be the greatest singer to sing a Calypso song. Calypso is about phrasing it. I mean, if you look at some of the best Calypso in the world, they're not great singers. If you look at Stalin and Chuck Bass and them men, and you see them Griner and them men, them in Lord Kitchener, them in, you won't call them in great singers, but they're great, great Calypsonians. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like RP being these men, but if you look at singing it, we call it normal sense, right? But these men are class in their own field. So just to show the Calypso is not all about, you got to hold your key, yes. You got your diction, got to be good. You got to make sure that you're projecting everything, yes. But at the same time, you don't. It's about phrasing too and getting a message across. That's what makes the art form so interesting and so unique and so enjoyable because it has its element to it.
That's why Calypso, Calypso is magic. And that way he studied Calypso so long. And that way he's got bigger Starcom on the time. Like, they can't touch me at Starcom because things like this, right? And this allow people like you to teach me so I could go back now and teach the youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
So I could get information from people like you and teach the youngsters because what we would call great singing, right, is based on a North American European standard. So if I can sing, I believe I can fly.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I can touch the sky. People can hardly sing real good because that's so closer to North America, which is a dominant nation. But if I come and sing, tell them Calypsonians for me. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
People say that's singing Calypso, but because it's the African in me that we ain't really attached to yet. Because you see that phrasing and the ability to use the dialect and twang. You see that word twang come back again that we talked about earlier? When you talk about phrasing and whole city word.
That's part of who we are from slavery.
Right. Not singing ball. You know, not singing ball. You know me singing ball. You know me, I ball out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ball got enough different meanings to us. How we can sing a ball to play with, and how we sing a ball as in a ball, you know, in the same thing all the time.
We need to embrace it. Other cultures don't try to sound like we, so what we got to try to sound like them?
And listen, they don't, and they are unapologetic. If a Jamaican come from here, the Jamaican come from here, and holler, yo, classic, you know what I mean, sir?
Exactly.
You know what I mean, sir? Wagwan boss, Jamaican can do that. He ain't gonna ever train because he know the magic in being authentic. That word you call authentic.
Just to let the fellas know, it's 10 minutes after 7, so we'll press on for a few more minutes. I mean, there's never enough time for classic. Classically classic, as KB mentions him. But classic, my question would be, two questions. One for the fans who are listening and wondering, what's it like backstage at a semi-finals, well, no longer semi-finals, but in the days when semi-finals had like 15 and 20,000 people. And then, of course, what's it like on a finals night? I mean, these are your friends that you're competing against and you're trying to prepare yourself to deliver your songs with thousands of people out there watching at the venue and thousands more listening and watching around the world.
Yeah, boy.
Well, I could sort of say for certain backstage would be tense for me. You know what I mean? Because you want to do your best. And anytime you got that you want to do your best, you have that little nervous energy going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you see guys walking around with a towel around their neck. Sometimes got these different little rituals that, you know, nobody can't come in their room. And some people pray 10 or 15 times before and after. And some people, but everybody got their own different little thing going on. But the atmosphere does be tense. Then I would say a lot more tension than now. It's still competitive, but I think the guys now have been so accustomed now, or those who go there often, that you reach the stage where, for me, I tell myself, you know, once I put everything in place that you're supposed to put in place, I go in and do my thing, and we just fall. You know, I ain't taking it on so hard anymore because I've lived to learn that does only affect my performance. I remember back in 1989 when I had tick for tack and stuff. That night it was very, very tense and nervous. I thought it was trying too hard. You know, so I learned to appreciate
and value the opportunity of being there and tell myself and let my guard down and I go ahead and do what God do. See it like any other night, but have fun. Last year, we keep back to semi classic, have fun. And that's what we did. I mean, have fun, you know, and the rest is history, as they say.
The way you write, you as your song said in Tit for Tat, you mash people's courts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what type of approaches have you had from lawyers and personalities? You don't have to call names. I don't expect mm-hmm. that. But what types of approaches have you had from personalities and lawyers that have tried to intimidate you in the past? What have they done? What have they sent you? What remarks have they dropped?
Well, I would say that Barbados is a very litigious society. We claim we love Calypso, but then you reach the stage that you got to sing a Calypso. If you're mashing people's cars, people can get a lawyer to write you or write the tent and that kind of stuff, and then people want to sue and put you in court and look for money with you or the radio station and that kind of thing. I've had those experiences. I mean, some prominent people who would claim that they're back the art form, but once they get in a position and you don't even have to call a name, even if you insinuate certain things, and people are ready to go to the court, the route of going court and that kind of stuff. And I would say that has affected Calypso in a big way. Not that we want the right or the license to defame anybody or anything like that, but I think that the tolerance for social commentary in Barbados is a little too low. Trinidad has been doing this for over 100 years, and you can say certain things in Calypso. A man will laugh off that and drink a little drink and go on with your life. But not in Barbados. They get the lawyers and things, and they want to call the Sudi radio station. They've had experiences where people made money off of me or whatever, through the radio stations. And that kind of thing. So I try to. So that's why when you hear people saying in Calypso and Barbados that we don't hate and we don't whatever, we have to be very careful. And then you reach a stage where you come to the NCF competition now, where the lyrics start to get vetted, and they can make you change lines for some of the most frivolous of reasons. I will get it to now, right? You have to change lines and things because somebody proved that it's offensive and all, but somebody don't want to take that chance because they're not sure how that can go down. So see, you can't sing that line. You can't sing. You got to take out the big law lines and things. So that's why that thing make it even more difficult to write Calypso. But if you're smart, you would know ways to get around it and say certain things without saying them. So that's the road I go now. So I learned from the experience, and I would walk a thin line, but I can still hit hard whenever I can.
No crop over this year. How does that impact you and entertainers in general, and specifically Calypsonians?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a loss of revenue because, as I say, it was getting myself together in terms of the competition. Obviously, any finals already, you know. But I think that this is going to cause us to actually revisit the art form and do things differently. Eh? Because if there's no competition or there's no avenue, well, because sometimes all the certain things, the necessity is the mother of invention. But now we as artists now got to rethink how we put our music out, what we need to do. And I think that we should use this opportunity to look at how we can offer something different, maybe find music that can serve these times. You know what I mean? Because if you can't whine and jam and jump up, we can make songs that people can still listen to, though. So we need to revisit how the types of songs we write and how we write them and that kind of stuff. But we can still serve the public and remain relevant. But I hope that this is an experience that we can learn from and grow and build from here.
But Classic, there is an audience out there that doesn't care that we have a break for crop over due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Joking, jamming, skin out, pooch back, go on your eyelid. That's what they want. And they're not waiting when this has passed to do something different. And not only in terms of music, but in terms of church, in terms of other areas of life. They're just waiting to get back to do the exact same thing they were doing before.
But I'm not even sure if it's going to be the same way how it was before, neither, because I think there's going to still be an element of fear there. I'm not sure that the people can be ready to hold on from people and jump on people to that extent anymore. Not if it's still lingering, you know that can cause you your life or cause you to get sick. So I'm still thinking that, as much as people saying that, there's going to be an element of apprehension out there, because people think there's going to be a new normal, and people think we're going to get back to normal. But what is normal?
Especially a certain age group. I could tell you now, like, they got a certain age group that
The young people.
Nah, they all know you still see people living like normal, you know, and people at people house like normal. It's still normal. You see, man, got videos from live and everybody hanging together. It's crazy, classic. A certain age group will, but you see the jump on wind and the walk up and grind that thing. Then make it a front time, get the floodgates open.
They're
walking up again.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. See, a few events can change that thinking too, though.
Have to.
A few events.
But you don't want to be labeled either. You don't want to be labeled.
The only thing I'm saying is that if something drastic had to happen, and you find that, unfortunately, you find that there's a social spread and people
want to die
and stuff, then people can rethink that. But we don't want to, you know, the dwell on that. We hopefully things will get back to normal. But I would like to believe that these things happen for a reason, and I hope that it will teach us something pretty better, though.
Now, the Pickety Crop changed to one song. That was originally intended for a period of, I think it was 2 years.
2 years, yeah, 2 years.
So now this year has been cancelled out. We haven't had the second year of that. Obviously, the potential to have a certain crowd, if it was held this year, would be virtually half at best. And then there is an older age group that tends to follow Pickety Crop. They may be hesitant to come out. Would Pickety Crop have to go further changes in 2021 as far as you're concerned?
I don't think so. I think that what happened last year is that the finals was a success from all reports. In terms of the audience, it was the biggest finals in a long time. Right, so they say they ain't back, don't fix it. So I think they have one more year to go in one song competition before they renew it. So I believe that the Pickety Crop will probably stay the way it is, and the one song will go again unless something happens to undermine that effort. Because if you do the one song again and it's successful, I don't very much it will change that, right? But as I say, it's the type of song. I think the one song concept now is a type of song now that going to keep that competition alive. There's certain songs that would not work in a one-song competition that would probably work in a two-song competition.
From a financial perspective, Crop Over, not being on, is a massive hit for so many people in so many sectors. And the reason for one of the changes to the Pickety Crop was to make it more potentially financially less damaging to the producers of it, because it's a very expensive undertaking, and that was made very clear and transparent by the team at the NCF and the Ministry of Culture. Given the type of economic hit that we have so far, you think we'll be in a position next year to put that type of money in Pickety Crop?
Well, it depends upon how government's coffers are. If government is willing, because you have to see it as an investment. And from all indications that they didn't lose money for the finals last year, so it's an investment. And if you want the Pickety Crop is an integral and big part of the festival too. You know, there are people who just want to go to the finals. They don't understand. So we can't ignore that market and say that it isn't viable. It is. I believe if we do the right things and put the right people at the finals, they can be viable, though. You know?
Correct.
So I think that there's I have hope and confidence that Pickety Crop will survive.
You look at the talent like Cyril. He's still a young man, but he's certainly not Junior Monarch. You look at Aziza. You look at Sammy G. And then you've got people like Doyen, who used to be AC. And, of course, you've got Yohan Jay, and you've got Mr. Personality. Can you see? Because people don't look at it with vision, right? 30 years ago, it was 1990. I was 19. You were a little older. You didn't expect to be looking back at 2020 and say, 30 years gone so fast. But if you can do it now because you're older, can you see those names that I called and the new ones that come along? And, of course, Bit, can you see them on a national stage hammering out that calypso the same way it's been done over the past 40 years?
They obviously will not do it the way how we do it, because they're from a different era and they've had different influences and stuff. Like a young person that I would do it. The main people say the calypso are from the Pickety Crop world. It's dying, it's true, it may change. And so the young people may do it differently. I want to believe that we need to force it. Do it this way, this is good, so do it after whatever. It's still sort of fundamental. Otherwise, it's not going to be Calypso anymore. But my main concern about Pickety Crop and the Pickety and stuff is that, and social commentary is that, the songwriting, we need proper writers. Not the writing leaves a lot to be desired.
But people say that everything changes. Right? And as a result, we've had pop, we've had karaoke, we've had everything in our national competition to accommodate it. But I don't see authentic reggae as being anything other than authentic reggae. If you have a fusion, you have a fusion. But for the purpose of a competition, you must have an idea of what you want. You want ballad, you want R&B. Right. What do you want?
That way, so certain fundamentals can still remain, but at the same time, they may bring their own style. Not that the calypso may can go on to pop or jazz, but I don't believe in them fusion thing of calling it calypso. But I'm saying that their approach, the way how they approach it, would be different. You know what I mean? So in terms of how they may phrase it different or whatever, either that, or they're gonna lose the pick of the crop audience is not as big as it is as it was before. But I think that what we got to do is find ways to broaden the audience. You know, to bring people into Pick of the Crop that they used to check for Pick of the Crop before. And you do that by making it sound exciting.
Right.
We want to use Do It Too, make your sounds entertaining, use humor and whatever, and make it so the comedy don't have to be so boring and predictable. And that's the problem that I find in our writing, that we said the writing needs to, when you talk about the writing needs to change, the writing ain't got to go to pop or R&B, but it needs to go to a level where you can attract people who need to follow social commentary.
So,
I did one song last year, one song attracted a lot of people who need to, like, they got people, they don't follow Calypso, but they knew one song. And they were telling me about it on the road, they don't follow Calypso, but I said, you like that song, I don't really check for Calypso, but I like that song.
And the good thing about it is that strategic, you wrote with the competition in mind and what the focus was as far as Pickety Crop was last year. It was a deliberate strategic move in terms of writing. But sometimes people write, they don't have, the competition has changed to one song as a theme. They don't have, like, in 2016, 50 years of independence for a theme. We had a million songs about that.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel that some people focus too much on the competition itself when they write a certain song, and that takes away from the potential for that song going forward? Because we play a lot of social commentary now in our classic Crop Over, that if people didn't write and perform and record social commentary, there'd be a lot less music to play on VOB in this month for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Because when you sit down and listen to 3 hours of, let's say, Soca, I Want You, You Want Me, Rub Up On Me, Rub Up On You, we got the cooler, we got drinks in the cooler. It's not the same thing as listening to 3 hours of social commentary where different stories are being told in every single song.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a different experience.
It's very much so, but that's what I'm saying, that's where the writer comes in now, because the writer got to find ways to reach people. And as I said, I think too many social commentaries stray away from the entertainment aspect, and they focus too much on the storytelling, and to the point where they come across that you're just preaching to people. People don't want you to preach to them. If they want to be preaching, they will go to church or whatever. I'm saying that you have to balance the entertainment aspect, where they make the humor can come in, that where the whole mood of the song, the tempo of the song is going to come in, and the way you put across your message, that's going to keep people interested.
So that desire to keep people interested and entertained is one of the reasons why soca songs are successful in a calypso competition. No, they may not have that depth in terms of the lyric and the theme, but they have a theme. If jumping up and dancing is a theme, and If I Love You is a theme, then why can't it be judged in a competition against a song that looks at the ills of the political system and the economic downfall of the Caribbean? Because once you put the two of them against each other and there's a certain mood that people want, that heavier song may not do well with the crowd, but it may do well with the judges, but judges will be influenced by the reaction of the people.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, that you can find a way to put a heavier song across without it being boring.
Correct. It don't have to be because it's heavy, that mean it have to be boring.
Because there are different emotions. You can sing a slow song and it ain't gotta be jumping or whatever, but you can touch me at a core, an emotive level that I think that song's the best song for the night, though, and I may not jump on a walk-up bar, but because you reach me at a level that I feel that song. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. That we don't just write the song and say, this is what I want to say, and that is it.
But listen, we got 3 minutes left, and I want, Classic, I want you to take this time to thank all those people that have influenced you and your fans, because I can tell you here at VOB 92.9 FM, you have thousands of fans. If you've never heard it before, if you felt you don't have fans, Classic, you have thousands of people that have been backing you since the 80s.
It's true.
So I just want you to use this last 3 minutes to, you know, your arrangers that you've that have stood out for you, the Calypsonians, the people that have counseled you, and of course the people close to you, if you wish to name them.
Yeah, of course, man. I got a lot of people to be thankful for. Let me thank Richard Stuff for giving me that first start in, you know, in singing in his competition, Teen Talent. I want to thank the mighty Gabby, honorable, the most honorable, for giving me so many tips and introducing me to Calypso, giving me so many ideas over the years. You know, the people like the Romeos, and you know, those are people who I learned from in terms of the art form itself. Great arrangers like Ricky Brathwaite, Mike Seeley, Smokey Root, all those guys I worked with all, throughout the years. And the fans and supporters. You see the people, the average man in the street, let me tell you something. Sometimes I pass the road and there are people I don't even know them. Man. People meet me and tell me, "Mom, my mother let you by, my grand, this boy before let you by," because don't forget I've been singing for so long, so I got fans from way back then, right? And some of them are seniors now, and I meet people who tell me, "Melissa, my mother didn't go along, she used to let you so bad, and she didn't even live to see that you won or whatever, you know, she would have been very proud of you, or my grandfather, my father would be proud of you, or somebody in my family," and believe me, those are the kind of sentiments that keep me going. When you're, even when judges are offering me then, and they didn't get in the way, you see when they walk the streets, and they go a place, they go up in a minivan, and bus, and they go about the road, and people see me, and they tell me, "Man, like, yeah, you're singing that song on TV, yeah, and like, that song, blah, blah." That is encourage me more than that. That was keep me going then. When the average person giving you that support, you know, so that is inspired. That mean a lot to me, because then you know that you're doing something right. You know what I mean? Even though you ain't getting the justification and the satisfaction and adulation that you would like, you know that support is what keeping you going. And I want to thank, you see, VOB, Starcom Network. VOB has been very good to me over the years here. I listened to this, not a station or whatever, but VOB played my music throughout the years and gave me that opportunity to be relevant and to remain, you know, in the eyes of the public or whatever. I want to thank Starcom for all of the love and support throughout the years, man. You guys, and what you all doing now in promoting and pushing the music, I know people like to knock radio stations and stuff, but I think some of you got to step back and look at a lot of work that VOB and Starcom in terms of making up the music. We're in a country where you could get this kind of promotion without paying for it. Yes, and we get a lot of promotion in Barbados, and we don't have to pay for it. Archie's got to pay for and do all kinds of things behind the scenes and lobby to get airplay and push. Starcom, I could be home and people telling me, "I hear this song, I hear that song," what, and that means a lot to me. So I want to say thanks to you guys, because it means that our work is not going in vain, right? And I appreciate that to the max. But to the people, for giving me the support, as I say, they love and they support the fans and everybody, that means, and that was keeping me going. And that's every time I write with you all in mind. I didn't know that I can continue to grow and be better because of that love and that support.
I wish to say at this point for everybody listening around the world, it is VOB Classic Crop Over. It's not Classics Crop Over. Tonight for sure, it is Classic in Classics Crop Over. Stay tuned and you will hear that.
But I appreciate it. We're a classic in front of behind. Lots of love we're doing. It's all classic.
Classic, man. Classic, Iwan. Iwan, thank you for just taking your time out and taking time with me and going through things with me and helping to teach me certain things, because I love the information, I love the knowledge. So I just want to thank you for always being a good brother. And I want to thank you publicly for putting my name out there to a few people called me and said, "Man, Classic, tell me about you," and then me and them develop a great relationship in terms of everything that is due. So I want to thank you publicly for that, my brother. I really appreciate that.
I want to thank you, Sluggy, for the work you do with the young people too, because you know you're doing it thanklessly and you're trying to develop all those youngsters that got talent and things, and that's something. You know, something that could be very hard and discouraging, but you're fighting the fight because you know it's a bigger purpose. So I see myself in what you're doing too. So I respect you and admire you for that. So you keep it going.
And Classic, man, I had to step out to go into the next studio, but I just wish to state, I may have missed it, but I need you to understand how the team at MAD, Eric and Keith and Kevin, how they support Classic. I mean, they. I tell you, if any artist, listen, if any artist has the type of support that they have for you, they will always be a winner, my friend. I have to tell you that, because I watched that.
Peter Boyce and back in our time, Lewis and Kevin.
Correct.
I can't forget them fellas. But see me getting a call in there, so you tend to forget people in the heat of the moment and stuff. But
it's all love, it's all love for sure. That we run is great.
Yeah.
And I remember when you had the In Bed Together, and you had the gym show. Man, you destroyed in there, man.
It better get out.
To mash up the Bacchanal time versus the Best of Barbados show is an achievement for any artist. Don't let anybody fool you. It's like winning.
But it's such a commentary too, and the genius and store.
Oh, my.
Big up Mad Ronnie, one thank you. And I want big up my auntie, Shirley Lockton in the great USA, and my boy, young DJ Hachi. Thanks to everyone for supporting BJ Rhythm and Rhythm every Saturday and supporting this hard ears boy. I love all of one of Ronnie. Thanks a lot, Classic. It's all love, my brother. You are a legend. And thank you for your art. This is your boy, Sluggy Dan, every Saturday from 6 p.m. BJ Rhythm and Rhythm. I am out. Manners.